Well, what's up, everybody? Thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, April 11th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next half hour to 45 minutes or so as we go over some things in the betting world. Happy to be joined by Sports Cheetah of WagerTalk.com. We're going to chat some NBA playoffs here on today's show. Before I bring him live onto the air, a couple of things I want to mention. First, you know this already, but Monday, Tuesday, Thursday with our Bang the Book Radio segments up until the month of August. And then also the three contests going on over there at bangthebook.com, the Daily Streaker Contest, monthly pick of the day, and then also some monthly cash prizes for the top ROI, top win percentage, and then also top units won. So that's something that'll hold you over here for the summer months. Of course, you've got MLB, NBA, and NHL playoffs. So plenty of things to pick from on a daily basis over there at bangthebook.com. We'll go ahead and dive right in for today's show. Bring on Sports Cheetah from wagertalk.com. Mr. Cheetah, how are you today, sir?
I am doing well. How are you doing, Adam?
Doing very well. Appreciate your time, as always, here on this Hunting for Winners segment. We're going to chat NBA playoffs here, talk about some of the betting strategies, talk about some of the things that you look to incorporate during the second season for the NBA. First and foremost, I think this is probably a pretty obvious answer to give, but what are the biggest differences between betting the regular season and betting the playoffs in the NBA?
Well, I guess from a situational standpoint, or people that are really trying to decipher a team's motivation in the playoffs, they should always be 100% motivated. Maybe if a team's down 3-0 and they're about to be swept, you might see a team that's, you know, thinks they're done and their attitude's different, but generally they don't want to be swept. So they're trying their best anyways. So in the regular season, especially the second half, you have a lot of teams completely opposite. Like, today's a great example of teams like the Trailblazers, who just locked up the 8th seed. They're resting Lillard and McCollum. You have the Cavs actually resting LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love. And I think the Jazz are actually resting a couple guys potentially too tonight. And so you'll see a lot of that, and it's tougher to really handicap late season NBA versus the playoffs, where you know, okay, this is it, and everyone's going to be playing their best guys that are healthy at least, and then, you know, giving it their all.
Well, and then another thing about the playoffs, so like you said, I mean, everybody should show up motivated. At the same time, you do have some situations sometimes where teams are just completely outgunned, outmatched. Do you find that, you know, those teams that are overmatched in the first round are good bets early in the series, because maybe, you know, the favorite's going to sleepwalk through the game a little bit?
Yeah, that could be. I think it's still just, you know, obviously dependent on the particular game and matchup and the number and all of that. But if you are going to catch, I think, a dog that, you know, is going to try to, you know, beat a team that's a big favorite, say it's the Portland Golden State potential matchup round one in the West, or, you know, Boston and Chicago, I think it's going to be right away in that first game where people, you're getting more points because they are on the road, meaning the team that's, you know, the bigger underdog. And, you know, the team that is slated to win, especially a team like maybe Boston, who's actually never been in the position before. Since Cleveland's resting people tonight, Boston's like an 11-point favorite last I saw against the Nets. Boston's going to take a game lead and basically be one. They control their own destiny now. If they win the next two games, they're probably going to be the one seed. They've never been in that spot before, and I think it's interesting to just kind of, you know, figure out how they're going to handle it. And they're playing a team potentially in the Chicago Bulls or the Miami Heat, depending on how that shakes down, that is particularly the Bulls have guys that have been there before. I actually think that would be a very intriguing, you know, first round matchup where I wouldn't be surprised at all if that went six, maybe seven games, and people maybe would think, oh, an 8 seed versus a 1 in the East, like Boston stinks. You know, I think that might be a little tricky spot. So I generally, if I'm looking to back a dog that's a big dog as far as a series price goes, or from a game-to-game basis, I generally do it earlier in the series before the better teams that are more talented are able to make adjustments based on what their opposition throws at them. And then ultimately, you know, the superior team's going to win in the NBA more often than not. So, I would bet and look to back those dogs in, you know, the first game of the series rather than later on.
We'll get a little bit deeper here and talk some more game-by-game type stuff, but let's talk some generalities here in the NBA playoffs. Do you make adjustments for home court advantage relative to the regular season?
You know what? I do slightly like a half point just because, well, and it depends on where, like the Thunder, excuse me, the Thunder a few years back, they were like the highest rated home court. Now it's the Warriors. And it's kind of, based on just recent data and the actual degree to which they, beat teams or perform against a spread at home versus on the road. But I generally think in the playoffs, you're going to be selling out games more often than not. And so you're going to have more of that crowd aspect. And you also are just going to have a more meaningful game. Whereas, a home court game today, two games before the season ends for a lot of teams is almost insignificant. So it's really interesting question because it changes for me throughout the playoffs, or excuse me, the season. So obviously for the playoffs is different. The playoffs might be a little bit, valued a little bit more than the beginning of the season, but the beginning of the NBA season, I'm valuing it a lot more than I am the end of the NBA season. So you kind of just varies and changes as the season progresses and kind of based on every team's situation.
Does it change for you throughout the course of a series as well? I mean, especially if you talk about the Western Conference, let's say, you got Oklahoma City. Let's say that they win a series, wind up having to go play somebody out in California, or say Memphis. Let's say that something strange happens with them in San Antonio, and then all of a sudden find themselves playing Golden State or whatever the case may be. Will you alter your home court advantage as the series goes along based on travel?
No, actually, I don't. There could be something there, though. I actually hadn't really had that thought. I think teams are at this point they're accustomed to traveling, and honestly, in the playoffs, you're getting, and people will complain about this. You'll hear it on Twitter or wherever else in a week or two, but how long they drag on, like the first round, and teams generally actually have a lot more rest time in the playoffs than they do the regular season, and so even if the travel is a little further, they have a day in between every single game, which isn't the case during the regular season. And so I'm not actually adding or subtracting. I think it probably all is just kind of a wash and similar anyways. But I mean, you could look at that by the time maybe game seven rolls around and a team has to travel again. But that's the last thing they're really worried about is traveling if they're about to go on the road to potentially pull an upset in a game seven. So I just don't think there's really much there that's worth considering to make a bet.
All right, one of the things we were talking about before we started recording live here is that you like to do some dabbling in the series price market. You think there's some value in that. What types of things are you looking for when you're looking at a series price?
Yeah, well, I have, a general projection as far as, I expect, say, the Warriors to beat the Blazers 93% of the time in a series or whatever. And, that would equal a price of whatever it actually is, minus 1050 or something like that, or 950. And it's somewhere in that range where it's like a break-even point. And then you can really just look at the numbers and see if there's an edge, one way or the other. So I do that. There's also, I think, value in if you have books that offer it, not a ton do, but you can get actual like spreads within the series. So like last year, one I really, really believed in, which I got a lot of crap for on Twitter, but I get a lot of crap because I don't like LeBron and I don't like the Cavs or I don't like the Heat when he was on the Heat. But they were, I think the Raptors just to win one game plus 3.5 games within the series. Was like minus 200, which I thought was remarkably short. Like it should have been 500 or 600, and I think I was like maybe it was 220. Anyways, I bet it, and everyone was like, "You don't like you're stupid. The Cavs are going to sweep the Raptors." Sure enough, it went six games, so the Raptors actually won two. And people were giving me crap, especially I think because the Cavs went up 2-0, they won their two home games. But anyways, that aside, I just was bringing that up as an example. Last year, there's a lot of value in actually betting some of the spread within the series. One spot where I think I might consider it would be the Thunder and the Rockets are kind of two teams that are very intriguing because of their star players and the MVP race and all that. But excuse me, I think the Thunder have a chance as Westbrook. It's just he's remarkable and the matchup's obviously one of his former teammates. And the Rockets is kind of seemingly cruising and coasting along, whereas the Thunder have been actually playing better in recent, I would say the last 2 to 3 weeks comparatively to the Rockets. And I don't know, it just seems like a spot where you're going to maybe get a decent price getting a Thunder, plus 2.5 games, something where if they can force six or seven games, then you're cashing that bet. So there's a lot of those types of spreads I'm going to be looking at playing within series, both in the West and in the East.
So is that part of, I know we talked on, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago or something like that, when we talked about you having a separate futures bankroll and a day-by-day bankroll, you know, for all the different leagues. So is that part of your futures bankroll then, or are you using some profits from the season? What's your plan for that?
No, actually, series to series, I would treat more like, because, I mean, that is only really tied up for a week to 2 weeks. I treat that as like an everyday bet. So I'll just be using the regular bankroll for series bets. Sometimes where it does kind of change my game plan would be if I have a series bet and I'm really wanting to bet a particular game, say a game five on a certain team, but I already have a series bet where, you know, if the team does win and go up 3-2, then my series bet is looking really good. Sometimes instead of betting, you know, one or two units on that game five, I'll stay away because I essentially have the bet, you know, anyways with the series bet, or I'll bet it for like half of a unit or something, or bet it smaller. So the only real difference is if I'm betting them and it's part of my, you know, everyday bankroll, then it and depending on the, you know, particular matchup or the way the series goes down and the situation, I can kind of decrease or sometimes increase, you know, my bets in certain games throughout the series.
Well, if you read a lot of series predictions out there, you're going to see stuff like, you know, Celtics in six, Wizards in seven, that type of thing. Do you bet any of those exact series results props?
You know what? I'm going to toot my own horn because I don't, except for one time in my life. And there might be a second time because the situation is setting up very nicely. But this was years ago. You guys remember when the Heat finally beat, they won a championship. It was LeBron's first, I'm pretty certain. And no, he beat the Thunder. So it was, then they lost to the Mavs. And then the Spurs were about to beat them in game six in Miami. And it was like 7-8 point lead, final minute. They were rolling out the trophy. And there was the weird threes that LeBron was airballing that were bouncing right back to players. And Ray Allen hit the three. They ended up winning in overtime. That was like a devastating loss to the Spurs. And sure enough, the following season, because obviously the Heat ended up winning game seven too. But the following season, they went to – it was the same matchup. And the Spurs were actually, I think, just a better team the year before and then a better team that particular season. And, as much as I really wanted to bet the Spurs to win it all, and I did, I was – for some reason, I was just very certain they were going to win in like five. Like they were just going to dominate – LeBron would have one good game at home in Miami in game three or game four, and the Spurs would wrap it up at home in game five. And I think it was like 7-1. And so I made like a, for me, it was a very, very large bet on Spurs in five, and it cashed. And since then, I haven't ever bet an in six or in seven bet until this year. I think you're having a very, very similar setup where if the Cavs, and that's even if they get to the finals, they're just struggling. So they're so bad on defense now. And if they get to the finals against a Warriors team who should have won last year, blew a 3-1 lead, they weren't healthy, they've added Durant, who's lost to LeBron in the past in the finals, I am very, very, very likely to bet a lot of money on Golden State sweep or in five. Like betting both of them, it should turn a profit either way. And I think it's setting up very similarly. And I might not even do five. I might just bet Golden State sweep because I really am afraid for Cleveland. And I'm hoping in a weird way that they do advance and meet Golden State in the finals, because I think it would just be an absolute bloodbath. And, you know, laying minus 250 for a series is going to be really low too, I think. And anyway, so I'm kind of hoping this year. So I'm kind of telling that whole background story to tell people I think this is setting up very similarly. And assuming everyone's healthy for Golden State this time, I think it's going to be a pretty short series or pretty short finals.
Before we get into some game-by-game stuff, I do want to ask this. I'm pretty sure, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, you've got a Warriors future, something in the minus 110, minus 120 type range. You have anything else for the NBA?
Yeah, the only two ones that I bet preseason were Clippers, about 40-1 to win it all, and then the Celtics were 8-1 to win the East. And those are the only two futures I made. And then I think it was on this show, we looked the Celtics price up. It was about a month before the trade deadline, because I was talking about teams where I thought, you know, if I had to make a play, and I think I did a wager talk like video in the studio giving out, the Celtics were plus 975. So I actually added a little bit more. So I actually have a pretty big bet on Celtics to win the East. At the time, they were a few games behind the Cavs, but Horford had missed a lot of the season. Bradley was still out for them. And I was actually fairly certain they were going to make a trade because they have all these assets. And Jimmy Butler and Paul George were basically on the table. And sure enough, they didn't make a trade. But it didn't end up mattering. They're probably going to end up with a one seed anyways. They just got Bradley back. I think it's only been 2 weeks now. I mean, they're really, really good. And so anyways, if they're home court in the Eastern Conference Finals and we're holding plus 800 or plus 975, we're going to have a lot of room to profit by, you know, betting the Cavs back in that spot and locking up probably three or four units each way. As far as the Clippers go, I'll have to just kind of let that ride in the first round against Utah, which I think they will win. They should, unless, you know, Chris Paul breaks his hand or something like he's done in the past. And then after that, they're playing the Warriors. Luckily, I have that Warriors future from earlier in the year. And it might have been, I think it was 120 or 125. I don't think I ever got as low as 110. But it was when I bet it, they were struggling early in the year because they were giving up a lot of points. They were trying to figure out how they were going to incorporate Durant. But to me, it was very evident that nobody else was in the West was going to give them a shot, because at the time it was basically like the Rockets were the second best team in the West and the Spurs were finding a lot of ways to win close games, and they're the Spurs. But they really, after Kawhi, they're just not very good and they're old. Guys like even LaMarcus Aldridge is starting to look old, which is crazy because just a few years ago he was player. But I just think, or I thought at the time, this is way too low. Come, you know, the NBA Finals, we're going to have minus 125 and you're going to be able to get plus 200 and something on the Cavs. Or, you know, even if the Cavs don't get there, then even better. So I made that bet and then Durant got hurt and I was really worried. Luckily he's come back. He's going to play two more games before the playoffs and hopefully everything's okay. But I just think, you know, are they really afraid of anybody in the West this year? I don't think so. The team that really gave them trouble last year was the Thunder, and they're not even the same team, and they're not even set up to meet in the playoffs anyway. So, yeah, I'm pretty confident in the Warriors bet. I think now they're minus 225 or whatever to win it all, which is probably a lot more fair of a price. And, you know, anything minus 200 or better is actually probably short. Someone asked me that on Twitter this morning, and I hadn't been following the prices, so I checked and I saw minus 225. But I just really think the Warriors are far and away better. I mean, they have a better plus-minus point differential than they did last year when they won 73 games. And Durant missed not half the season, but he played 50-something games, 59 games, I think. That's incredible. They've won 14 in a row. They're playing their best basketball yet. And I just think it's a team that's not going to be losing, barring, you know, an injury. So I think it's really just an injury bet. So, yeah, keep your eyes out there. If you see something minus 200 or less at like a credit book, or, you know, maybe somewhere offshore that's behind or needs Golden State money for some reason, definitely take a look at making a bet there.
All right, let's look overall at the Eastern Conference, and then we'll try to break down some of these first round matchups. Not all of them are set as of yet, and we're recording this here on Monday evening. For the most part, looks like things in the West are pretty much set in stone. In terms of the Eastern Conference here, the top four seeds have had a grasp of home court in the first round for a while. Washington 6 up on Atlanta in that 4-5 game. Do any of the top four seeds have a decent chance of losing in the first round in your mind?
The Hawks have been playing pretty well. I mean, at least against the Cavs they do all of a sudden. For people that don't know, they rested a bunch of guys because they're basically locked into the 5 seed. I think the Bucks could catch them technically. Anyways, but I think it was Friday night. They played the Cavs on the road. I think it was just a game they figured they were losing anyways. And they literally rested, I think, all but one starter. Excuse me. So at the time, I think there was 6 minutes left. They were tied. And they ended up winning the game by 16 or 18 points. And then just two nights later, they played in Atlanta. Atlanta played all their starters. And the Cavs were up 26 going into the fourth quarter. And the Hawks came back and tied it. Went to overtime and beat the Cavs again. So the Hawks are kind of playing this weird game where they're beating the Cavs and kind of gaining this confidence they didn't have literally just Thursday. And so I'm kind of intrigued by them, and they're playing a Washington Wizards team that's definitely better. But they've done this before where they've gone to the playoffs as the favorite. I think they lost to Toronto in the first round in a 4-5 matchup a few seasons ago. And then last season, they didn't even make the playoffs. So I'm definitely intrigued to see how Washington responds to being a favorite again. And Scotty Brooks is the coach now. And I would say, obviously, they have the best shot, but don't, you know, also Toronto, they actually have, I don't know if people knew this, they are technically the best team in the East. Not only are they just a game and a half behind like the one seed, but their best player, Kyle Lowry, has also missed almost half the season. But they have the best plus or minus point differential in the whole Eastern Conference. They're plus 4.1 per game, and the Cavs are only plus 3.5, and the Celtics are only plus 2.4. So that normally kind of gives you a sense of who the better teams are looking at that point differential. And, you know, in the East, you could argue Toronto's, you know, the best, but the only reason I bring it up as a team that could lose first round is because I really like the Bucks, and the Bucks play a game that's a little bit different as far as slowing the game down a little bit and playing defense when sometimes that's not a thing anymore in the NBA. And their point differential is basically dead even. You know, the Hawks are actually minus one per game, even though they have the better record and better seating. So don't be too, I guess, surprised if the Bucks, you know, maybe even force seven games against Toronto, as they just now are bringing Lowry back into the mix. They could be a little rusty. They traded for Ibaka this year, is another guy they're trying to incorporate into their fold. So that would be my two, obviously. I would be shocked if the Cavaliers actually lost to the Pacers, which is probably going to be the setup there, the 2-7. But if Boston played Chicago, like I mentioned earlier, a team that kind of got all this pressure now being a one seed in the Eastern Conference against a team like Chicago, I don't know what Wade's situation is with injury, but with Jimmy Butler and Rondo's been there before, maybe all of a sudden you get old school Boston Rondo going against his old team and then some of the young Bulls players. That could get a little tricky. So I am intrigued by the Bulls if they, you know, hold on to this eighth spot. If it ends up being Miami, then I think Boston would handle Miami pretty easily. But yeah, that's kind of my assessment there on those matchups.
All right, we'll do an overview of the Western Conference here and then talk some game-by-game strategies. Golden State will not lose to Portland. The Rockets, I think, should be okay against the Thunder, but like you said, you know, you got two superstars there going at it. That 4-5 series between the Clippers and the Jazz, kind of a toss-up. We'll see who gets home court in that one. What about the Spurs? Are the Spurs vulnerable here against the Memphis Grizzlies?
They always are. You know, they lost to them as a one seed against an eight seed a few years back. The Grizzlies were a better team back then for sure. But I think it was just the other day they were playing in San Antonio, and the Spurs needed a late comeback. If I recall, maybe even forced overtime, something like that, to beat them. But Memphis just always plays them close. It's one of those matchups where obviously they have an advantage inside because they have guys like Marcus Hill and Zach Randolph, which is basically an advantage against anybody in the league. But they really just slow the game down to a point where it kind of bothers San Antonio, which normally isn't the case because San Antonio doesn't mind playing slow and, you know, playing a grinded-out type game. And I think the other thing, which is really – it's just like a matchups thing, kind of an X's and O's thing. But when your best player is the best defender, you know, one-on-one defender in the league is Kawhi Leonard, and against other teams, like, say, even like the Warriors, you know, he's guarding Klay Thompson at least, sometimes Draymond Green, sometimes Steph Curry on a switch, Kevin Durant. You know, I mean, there's so many guys on the Warriors he can switch and cover and make a difference. Against the Clippers, when they've played the Clippers in the past, you know, he's actually, like, I think of all time, Chris Paul has the worst field goal percentage against any defender. It's Kawhi Leonard. So they've had success with that. He can guard James Harden on the Rockets. When you're playing the Grizzlies, like, Kawhi is not guarding Marcus Gasol, which is the Grizzlies' advantage. Like, Kawhi is kind of being wasted guarding Vince Carter and, you know, whoever else it is that's even playing wings for Memphis these days. You have a bunch of kind of like D-League level guys, it sounds like, that really just aren't getting a ton of time. And then, like, the other night they played, you know, they got Tony Allen, and there's one more I'm trying to think. James Ennis III. You have guys that, you know, just aren't really stars yet, and they're probably not ever going to be stars. And there's another one. Wayne Seldon's been playing some, and Andrew Harrison's been playing some. He's a point guard though off the bench, but they've been playing all these guys lately just because they're kind of locked into their spot. But when you're breaking down the starting lineup, I mean, it's quite Tony Allen's like the worst offensive player in the whole league, and Kawhi's going to guard him or Vince Carter, who's 40 years old. It's a waste of your main weapon defensively is that Kawhi can really make your opponent's best player work, unless you're playing Memphis where the two best players are too big for Kawhi. And honestly, Marc Gasol can dominate LaMarcus Aldridge or Randolph on Pau Gasol. I just think they have a big edge there, and normally they're much better defensively. And he's not guarding Mike Conley. He's too small really for Kawhi to guard. He might play him sometimes in screen and roll situations. But I'm intrigued to see how Pop really decides to attack that, because there just really isn't a spot for Kawhi to be advantageous defensively like he typically is.
Well, we'll have to see how that matchup plays out. And, of course, like you mentioned, there's a little bit of history here between the Spurs and Grizzlies. So that is probably, the best upset potential in the Western Conference by a large margin. But, hey, who knows? Oklahoma City could step up here. All right, so we've given some overviews. We've talked a little bit about some serious price type stuff. Let's discuss game by game. And I know a lot of people like to subscribe to the zigzag theory. I don't know if you do, but if you can you explain what that is to our listeners?
Yeah, people that believe in the zigzag theory, I actually don't really know where it started or what it is, but essentially, say you have two pretty evenly matched teams and, one team wins game one or whatever, the zigzag theory would say you bet the other team game two and then back on the other team game three and back and forth, and that'll be a profitable venture long term. I'm not sure if that's actually true or not, so I don't subscribe to it. I definitely think there are spots, though, where it makes sense to play in that direction, especially depending on how that first game went. You can get a gauge to if the win was a little fluky or not, or just looking at the night. There's a lot of teams that lose, but they got better looks from three throughout the entire game, and they just only shot 17%, and that was why they lost. But then in game two, they're not going to shoot 17% again on wide open three. So you're probably okay betting them, and maybe you get even a little bit of a better number. And now in some cases, the zigzag theory, I think books will actually open it and shade it that way because they know a lot of people like to bet it. So sometimes I actually like to look the other way, and if the number applies and some of the stuff from game one or game two or the previous game makes sense. So for me personally, I don't just automatically look at playing zigzags, but I think there's spots where it makes sense and there's spots where it makes sense to wait and get a point or two of value betting the other side, closer to tip off.
So what are some of the game-to-game tips you would have for our listeners?
Well, I don't know if there is a particular game-to-game thing you can just do that's going to make you money. I mean, you have to incorporate all the variables you're using to handicap a game anyways. One example I just threw out was, a team that was really cold from three, but if you watch the game and they were getting good looks, then they're probably going to get good looks in the next game. I think where the zigzag theory is like real philosophy of where the base is of where it could be profitable. I haven't looked and back-tested it. But what tends to happen is when a team wins a game, this comes down to coaching, in my opinion. And when a team wins a game, they're very content with winning a game, and what they did was why they won, and they don't make adjustments. The losing team and a coach that's good and knows what he's doing, they're going to make adjustments. And a lot of times the winning team comes back and they try the same stuff and it doesn't work because the other team made adjustments. It's like a chess match, right? Well, really, really, really good coaches won't let a team do that. They're going to be making adjustments every game, no matter what, win or lose. But I think a lot of times you have teams that are just content after they win a game or two or three or whatever it is, meaning game one or two or three, and they think that that's the way they're going to win the rest of the games, and they don't counter, and so they get beat. Then they make adjustments, and the team that won are like, wow, the adjustments we made really worked. Let's do these again. But then the other team made adjustments to counter those, and then they win the next game, right? So I think that's in essence where there could be potential in some sort of zigzag theory being correct and profitable. But it would probably be only in games where I think each coach is pretty evenly matched, or not, and neither one's a very great coach. And also when the teams are evenly matched, where you're not getting, like, you know, Portland, Golden State, you're not going to be ever betting a zigzag theory because Golden State's going to be, you know, a favorite to win 4-1, and, you know, maybe even a favorite to sweep. I'm not even sure how that'll break down, but, you know, this is primarily something you would do maybe in a 4-5 matchup, like the Clippers, Jazz, and, you know, Doc versus Snyder, and two pretty evenly matched teams, where, you know, one has more experience than the other's kind of young. That's a very intriguing series, and one where you might see some of the zigzag actually come into play. But, you know, it could also just be fluky too. But as far as general game to game tips, you know, I just, you know, dive into the box scores, watch as many games as you can. I think you learn a lot from what teams are doing and the adjustments they're making and how certain players are able to perform, you know, come playoff time. There's certain guys. This is one thing I read about where I don't think this is very true, because I think Brad Stevens is a fantastic coach. What he gets out of his players, no matter where he's coached, he gets way more than is expected. And even this Boston team, they don't have any stars. Like, Isaiah Thomas is 5'9", and what he does is incredible. And you give him all the credit in the world, but I mean, this team's going to probably now be the one seed in the East with him and Horford, and then a bunch of, like, younger kind of just role player guys. What I've heard is, when, you know, come playoff time, in the regular season, people don't care. They're just going to let Isaiah score 30 a game. But in playoff time, they're going to double team him, and especially on pick and roll and stuff. And, you know, is he going to be able to make the pass or make the right decision? And are other players going to be able to make shots? Now, I think Brad Stevens is probably just as good as anybody in the world at making game-to-game adjustments within a series. So, yes, they'll find a way to make that okay if people are double-teaming Isaiah. But that's something, like, you're going to be able to tell right away, you know, even in the first series, like, are teams defending certain guys differently now that it is the playoffs versus the regular season? And how are they responding to that? And how are they responding in that next game? Is it more of the same? Or are they really just, you know, going to keep double-teaming Isaiah, and Isaiah, you know, can't make a pass? Or, you know, Crowder and Bradley can't make an open three after they, you know, rotate the ball around because of the double team? That you have to watch that stuff and really use, I guess, like your, you know, your basketball knowledge to, I guess, assess, you know, what's going on within the game outside of just, like, the handicapping stuff and the numbers and what the spread's supposed to be.
Two other questions for you here in case something comes up as a follow-up in your answer. The first would be, you know, we're going to have some games probably where somebody gets blown out. And, I mean, we've seen it in the last couple of years where teams have just gotten beaten by 25, 30 points. You know, and then perception kind of shifts on that team. So in that respect, is that an angle that you kind of look for, where if someone gets blown out, you know, maybe you're kind of inclined to go against the overreaction? At the same time, I mean, it could just be a spot where a team just doesn't match up well. But, you know, we may run into that situation. So what kind of approach would you consider taking?
Hey, sorry about that, Adam. I think I left my my mic on mute, and so you couldn't hear me for a second. Sure. But to respond to your question, I think we actually saw it last year. The NBA playoffs, there was, I think it was, the record for most games decided by 20 or more points. A bunch of them were just blowouts, and you'd have weird games that we talked about, that Toronto Cavs series, because I was watching it closely because I had a pretty big bet on, like, Toronto just winning one game. And I believe they were blown. They won, but, you know, they lost one of the games by 26, then they'd win one game outright, and then they'd lose by 30 and then win a game outright. But people were upset the playoffs were just really, you know, uneventful because there were so many blowouts, which will happen. I don't really take a blowout into consideration going into the next game. It's more, you know, one game sample isn't enough. If a team blows a team out three times in a row, then yeah, sure. And you're going to see that in the line, it's going to adjust. And, you know, the game four line isn't going to be the same as it was in game one or game two. So generally I don't think there's much of an edge to be had in assessing a blowout. Cause I think if you're doing it after one game, that's a too big of an overreaction. And, you know, if you're doing it by the time it's game four or game three, then, you know, usually the market's moved with it. So for me, it's nothing I'm going to use to, like, handicap or make a particular bet. If now going, I guess back now that I'm remembering how you phrased the question, if you do see a big move into like a game two, like too soon, like say the say the Warriors blow the Thunder out by 28 and they were laying 14 or whatever it's gonna be, maybe it's a little less than that, but then you see it move 2 points in game two. Most likely I would probably be betting the Thunder then in game two, because I think a free 2 points just because one team won one game by more than the spread, that's going to be too big of an overreaction more often than not. So yeah, I generally would need to assess that based on, I guess, how long it takes for that perception or overreaction to be shown in the market, by the lines and the prices of the games.
Well, then another thing here, and one of the things I love about this show and the segments that we've had with you, we've been able to illustrate all the different ways that you can handicap. It's not just about doing single games. It's about playing futures. It's about, looking for props. And then also, of course, about live betting. I imagine that's something you like to look to do in the NBA. And I kind of thought about it a little bit as you were talking there in terms of, if a team is down 20 or 25 going into the fourth quarter, the favorite may take its foot off the gas and let the dog back into it a little bit. Maybe the back door opens up. On the flip side, the team that's getting killed might just pack it in for that game, sort of look for the next game so they don't spend too much energy. What are you looking for from a live betting standpoint in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think there's any particular way to go. I mean, sometimes you're thinking late in games and blowouts, oh, bet the under because all the scrubs are coming in. But a lot of times those scrubs, this is their chance to score, and they're just going up and down the court and firing at all cylinders. And you never really know. I've seen plenty of games end up going over because the scrubs are just hoisting a bunch of threes, and they, in that particular game, they're making a bunch of them. So yeah, I don't think end of game stuff, unless it's, completely unaccounted for in the live game line, I'll stay away from. But sometimes, if it is a 30-point blowout and it's going into the fourth quarter and it's a, say a Warriors game or the Rockets game where the total is going to be really, really high and, the fourth quarter total is like 59.5 live, when for all but maybe 1 or 2 minutes it's going to be backups, over the course of an entire quarter getting like under 59.5, that's going to pay off. So you have to be kind of paying attention to how things are going. It's not a completely dead angle, but sometimes like with 5 or 6 minutes left, you're trying to maybe make a live bet just because you want some action on the finish. That's where it can get dicey because there's a lot more variance in, 5 minutes versus, 12 or 48. So yeah, that's my, I guess, recommendation for that. But in general, I'll be doing just a lot of the same stuff I do anyways when it comes to live betting. I think I've talked about before on your show how I used to do, not used to, I mean, I still take spots and do this, but betting just on and off teams blindly when their best player goes to the bench and then comes back on the court. One guy that's been, I mean, it's no surprise, but one guy that's been the best at that is Westbrook. I'm going to pull up his actual numbers this year, but it's like, you look at their real plus or minus stats, but there's, literally guys that have, like, I think it might have been 3 years ago. It was actually before the Warriors won, or it was the first year they won 2 years ago. But Curry and Harden and CP3 were the top three in, like, plus or minus, basically how much better their team was when they were on the court versus off. And the discrepancy from Harden to Curry and Paul are remarkable, like 10 points or 9 points. And so I just make that point to show you how much of a difference Chris Paul and Steph Curry were to their teams that year. And so if you had just blindly, when Curry goes to the bench, bet the other team in game and then bet on the Warriors when Curry came back, you would have these like 6-7 point middles a ton of the time. Now, sometimes you'd be wrong and you just have to hold a bet or a position. But sometimes you'd have 15-point middles too. I mean, the Warriors, I think they were, like a plus 7 or 8 point differential per game. And Curry was himself, though, was like plus 16. I mean, they were so bad off the bench that they, I think it was the year before they even got Iguodala. And so their bench was just really, really poor. And anyways, it was a moneymaker because you're getting two sides and these massive middles in like every single Warriors game or every single Clippers game. And they were hitting the middles, you know, often enough that it was paying off remarkably. So those are things I'll look for, like Westbrook this year and even Harden this year, more so before they traded for Lou Williams. They didn't have a backup point guard, and Patrick Beverley was injured earlier in the season. And when Harden would go to the bench, the Rockets would be horrible. They were trying to run Eric Gordon as like their backup run the offense guy, and he's just a spot up shooter. So they struggled mightily when Harden wasn't on the court. A little bit better now with Beverley and Lou Williams, who they traded for from the Lakers. So less so now with him, but Westbrook is a huge one. And so there's certain guys that you can just – the numbers say they're this much better or this much worse when they're on and off the court for their teams. And you can take advantage of that when they go to the bench and they're off the court and then when they come back on. So that's like – that's one of my favorite angles to really kind of do as, you know – almost as if you're taking the approach as if, you know, you have a coin that you know, flips heads 53% of the time and, you know, it pays even money. You're going to be taking heads every single time. It's just a slight edge that over, you know, time in a vacuum is going to pay off. So that's definitely one thing I'm looking at in a lot of these games and matchups.
Well, lots of great insights today on the NBA playoffs from Sports Cheetah of WagerTalk.com. Mr. Cheetah, what's going on over at the website right now?
Yeah, we have baseball's off to a pretty good start, and I think we're 6-3 or 7-3 now. But have two games going tomorrow for baseball, and then we have the NBA playoffs firing back up. And NBA season, I can run off the numbers now for people that are curious. We are 46-34 at Wager Talk. That's like a plus 26%, and they do 3% plays essentially. So it was like a 8-9x profit on the year, and that's on like 80 games, I think. Yeah, 80 games exactly. So pretty good ROI on that, and goes into the playoffs. Hoping to do more of the same, so it should be fun. And the volume goes up quite a bit. I had someone asking me about this who follows me regularly, knows I bet the NBA a lot up until the All-Star game. And then I've probably made four or five bets since the All-Star break this year. Coincidentally, two of them were on Saturday, and we won both of them, so that was nice. But, yeah, once playoffs come back up, I'm starting to bet quite a bit more, and it should be good. People that don't know me, they know I'm a college football guy generally, and that's like my best sport to bet or whatever. But my absolute actual favorite league is the NBA, which most people don't know. So I'm excited. I love the playoffs every year. And a lot of people don't like it, and they make fun of it, and they wait until the finals. And then they're like, okay, now the finals is good. Why don't we just start the finals in April in October. And I love it. The NBA is my favorite league. I watch more games in the NBA than I do any other sport and league. So I try to pretend like I know what I'm talking about when it comes to basketball. But anyway, yeah, go to Wager Talk. Hoops coming up for the playoffs, and MLB just started.
And you can follow Preston on Twitter at SportsGia. Gia, thank you so much for your time, man. We really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll talk to you again real soon.
Sounds good. You guys take care.
Great stuff there today from Sports Cheetah of WagerTalk.com. Keep in mind here with that Monday, Tuesday, Thursday format for Bang the Book Radio, we'll be on again Thursday with my next edition of the Bettors Box. So that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again on Thursday.